Welcome to Part 3, 1978 and 1979 Seminaries.
So I got sidetracked. I want to go back and talk a little bit more about what was happening in practice and connect this with Judy's project, which I'm blanking out the name. What's it called?
Profound Treasury.
Profound Treasury. For me, it's still the conscripts.
The conscripts.
Okay. So things I had forgotten to mention. You remember when I went to seminary in 73, I sent a photograph that I took at the 43rd Street subway station in a photo booth with my name scrawled on the back and nothing else. Very rapidly, there became real seminary applications with essays. You had to say what classes you had taken, what your training had been, why you wanted to go to seminary, what you thought you were getting
what
into.
You'd been at.
Okay, this is what I don't exactly remember. You could probably find this out from someone else. When Datun started in 74, as far as I can remember, but when it became a requirement for a seminary, I'm not sure. Certainly by 78, everybody who came to 78 must have sat an entire four-week Datun. So early years before Datun started up, I'm not sure when it got built that thoroughly in. Before that, my generation, we did solitary retreats.
Right.
And they weren't requirements, but that's basically what Rinpoche did when you met him. He said, go into retreat. And we did that as absolute beginning students. That we could talk for months about. We won't. Lots of stories. So after the 73, those transcripts, we transcribed them, the people who were there, on home tape recorders. This also explains a lot of typewriters. A lot of them were handwritten. They got typed in with correct type. There weren't even any Selectrics yet at that point. So you see every chapter has a different typeface in those original transcripts of 73. At the 74 seminary, those people were expected to study the 73 transcripts at the same time. I do not remember, you have to talk to someone who was a participant at 74, if they had a class, but they had reading assignments. So before Rinpoche covered a topic, they had to read the material and have discussion groups about how he had taught it in 73. And this became cumulative. That means by 75, there was something called the transcript class. So Rinpoche taught the main class on the three yanas, and there were senior teachers giving oral teachings on readings from the transcripts, and there were discussion groups on both the transcript class and Rinpoche's class simultaneously. That was, and then all these extra optional classes that at that point were still whatever talent Rinpoche brought in to teach, they taught whatever they taught. It was quite random. And the only thing that everyone absolutely did was the transcript study and Trungpa Rinpoche's main class, and then they could do one or two of the other classes as they wished. So people have increasing meditation experience, must, before they go to seminary at all, and a tremendous amount of knowledge. The other thing that happened during those years of expansion, remember I said by the time he went into retreat, we had 45 employees. One of the offices was the education office. Lodro was in charge of that, and there was an incredible curriculum of classes being offered.
At the seminaries,
at the centers. At the centers with extremely well-worked-out curriculums, Battle of Ego. The editorial department laid a tremendous amount of what we called source books that we edited seminars, the curriculums were built around these seminars that Rinpoche had given, and so the people were very, very educated compared to us in the beginning by the time they came to seminary, and very experienced, and certainly by 78, everyone had to have sat a whole Datun before they came to seminary. And each year, there were more transcripts that they had to buy and read. And they were many, many inches of them. And I remembered, I said that wrong. 75 seminary was the first year of seminary where people stayed and got transmission at the end of seminary. 74, you remember, it's summer of 74, in the spring of 74, the first Tantra group was formed of a few very old senior students who had been at the 73 seminary, and we started our prostrations. After the 74 seminary, well, in the fall, actually before the 74 seminary, Rinpoche made a second Tantra group, brought in a lot of other people, opened it up to a lot of other people who had been at the 73 seminary, and gave tremendous amount of teachings on Vajrayana and had them start their Nundro. So 74, again, at that point what he did with that group, he made us have Tantra group meetings. So everyone, we had to meet at least once a month, and in the beginning, most of those meetings were at his house. He came to them, and as the groups got bigger, he came to us. And it was enormously important to him that people talk to each other about their practice, and he would give further teachings on the practice. Some of that material is in the Nundro manual.
And the early
days.
Tantra group.
This is the early Tantra groups and the material he taught us, and also in the early Tantra group talks. Also, so there were a lot of teachings for Vajrayana students. The first Vajra assembly started in 1975.
Ground Path and Fruition.
Ground Path and Fruition was the first one. And he was very serious about these teachings. This, again, is something that has changed enormously. Anyone who becomes a Vajrayana student in our Sangha now can simply buy these transcripts. At the time that he was giving these teachings, you were not allowed... When he gave the first Vajra assembly at... it was then Tail of the Tiger. It wasn't even Karma Chulling yet. I think it was still Tail of the Tiger. Maybe it was Karma Chulling already. Those tapes came back to Boulder. The Vajrayana students there, although we were the oldest students and had started the practice first, we couldn't just listen to those tapes. We had a whole weekend. We had to do intensive group practice together and listen to the tapes and have discussion groups at the appropriate time when he had given the talk. And from then on, as long as Trungpa Rinpoche was alive, nobody was allowed to just read transcripts, and nobody was allowed to just listen to tapes of those teachings. They had to do a complete
Vajra assemblies.
They had to be part of an intensive practice program. So this was part of this explosion of teachings.
So
and
we
first
are...
Abhisheka, and also in 70...
Later, after 79, in 78, 79.
No, it was right before he went into retreat in 77.
Okay, so Rinpoche comes back from the 77 retreat,
yes.
And there is this kind of reckoning, right?
Yes.
What happens?
It was as if things had been just, if you think of a machine with gears, the gears had started going click, 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 click. There was really a culture of fear going on and total intimidation, arrogance on one side and total poverty on the other, or presumably
when
poverty all through. While he was gone, he came back and he just pulled everything into focus. He just, boom, everything was back. And things got very healthy very fast again.
Because there was a reference point that everybody could
There was
pass.
A reference point, and he took up the reins himself again. And Vajra Regent was traveling enormous amount and teaching. And he had, Rinpoche insisted he set up a household with a master of the household and Kasung, Kusung, all that stuff started up really, really then, after he came back from retreat.
I think it was Sherry and Bob Bogler.
Yeah, they were that. They were in charge of his house, and Johnny
Perks was living
with
his wife and his children.
And with his wife and his children, that's correct, in a house with service. And so, 78 seminary. I'm quite sure that by then people had to sit datum, because this was the first seminary that became recognizable as what seminary felt like. This is the first time where it felt like there was discipline. On the one hand, there were always people who sat and were very disciplined. This was in Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, yeah. And but at the same time, it's like we were like little kids and he was our daddy. And there was always this kind of resistance, like when your parents tell you, do the homework. So people went to seminary because they didn't want to be anywhere else in the world but there. But it wasn't, you know, in terms of personal maturity, many of us were not there to practice. We were there because it was the cool thing and to be with Rinpoche. And yeah, you would practice, but you would also hide from practice. And that was just sort of part of the deal. So 78 was the first time people paid a lot of money. They had gone through this application process. People who had been already rejected three times finally got in. They were there to do the program, and they practiced. When the gong rang, there were always a few people who came in 5 minutes late, but that was it, which is really different than other years where there were people staying in bed until lunchtime because they just didn't feel like it today. So the whole atmosphere was different. And here he is with the Shambhala training program is running. You know, the first level, that first text has been unpacked.
The Golden Son of the Great East.
The Golden Son of the Great East. And also the, 78, we also had the first Kalpa Assembly, where we got the second text, the letter of the Black Ashe, with all the commentary on that, which was also given to the directors. And so what happens? He goes back to seminary, and although 76 seminary, he's talking almost exclusively about Great Eastern Sun. 78 seminary, it marked 100%. A different style of teaching. It's 100% Buddha Dharma.
Yep.
And, you know, this thing he was a genius at, he'd been doing it all along, but he didn't teach all the yanas. He just went thematically through and taught from his heart. These are one of the most beautiful set of transcripts I know, 78. 78 was a passion seminary, and there were an enormous number of musicians as students, and it was in this beautiful hotel that had this big living room with piano in it, and every Rinpoche would give a talk, and after the talk, instead of just going home and disappearing, he would come into this big living room full of couches, and we would all do music together. And he wrote words to some of the words to the Shambhala songs happened at the seminary in this room with some of the seminary participants, the ones that had not happened in the retreat in Charlemont. And there was music every night, and Rinpoche would hang out in the living room, and by then, and people who wanted to talk to him could stand in a little line and go up and talk to him. It was enormous, enormous warmth going on at that seminary. It was a beautiful seminary. So classic, again, this odd style of teaching he had. Judy said this, I think we all had this experience. I personally did not understand till after had died, and I did Natun school, how much of the traditional teachings he had given us, every single important body of traditional teachings, but in a way that we didn't understand. We just thought it was Rinpoche, going through these themes, and he talked, his teaching was, he taught as an artist, this is David Rome's insight, which I think is correct, talking experientially. For those of you, this is serious. For people who didn't know Trungpa Rinpoche and you don't know his voice, it's important to hear his voice. You cannot read his material without having his voice in your head. But the real key to Trungpa Rinpoche, for me, is to understand some of these unbelievably weird things he says. He's trying to describe his own experience to you. Imagine that he's talking experientially. This is a big key to understanding his teachings. And it's all over the place in the 78 seminaries. His beautiful talks on co-emergent wisdom about the eagle flying off the cliff and dropping its shoes. I mean, these are outrageous images that are, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. So also, very much the Vajrayana section of the 78 transcripts has a lot to do with Vajrayogini energy, and there are a lot of hidden teachings for that the people who had taken Vajrayogini, only they really understood what those teachings were about, and the rest of us were along for the ride, and they were enormously exciting and evocative.
Like co-emergence.
Yeah, so very, very strong flavor of that going on in the 78. What else can I tell you about that?
Carl Springer taught Vajrapolitics.
Yes, this is a gorgeous class.
You have notes of Vajrapolitics?
If I could find them somewhere. Oh, they're locked up in my sister's house. They were genius. That class was genius.
They were genius, and then I don't know if it was ever taught again, was it?
No, I'll tell you about that, because this again, at this seminary, mandatory. Rinpoche's main course, absolutely, there was a transcript course. This is the first time I taught. Rinpoche forced me to teach this course that he had designed for John Baker called Theism and Non-Theism.
Right, important.
But this Vajrapolitics class was mandatory for everyone. And what happened is Carl taught it, and it really was a genius class. And
we had to read Machiavelli and Lives of the Self.
All these things, but only Carl could teach that. And I think Rinpoche realized that, and what he decided, because he still, remember, he's putting pressure on everybody to do Shambhala training. He didn't care how old a student you were, you had to start at level one, and we're pushing everyone through that. So what happened in the next seminary, 79, was Vajrapolitics disappeared, but what came in its place was a course called Shambhala Culture. And Ken and I taught the first one.
Ken?
Green.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to run who used to be the person that used to run all the seminaries, Ken.
Yes,
Ray,
he was.
Right?
He still was. He was the Minister of the Interior,
right? The Maha coordinator, because yeah. each one of these seminaries had coordinators, mm-hmm. and the coordinators, like I think 78, it was Bob Rader.
Yes, that's right.
Bob
that
Rader
sounds
and
right.
somebody else.
And also, you should understand that these seminaries by then they were so sophisticated. These
so
really
beautiful.
Were entire cultures in a way that none of our programs have ever been since. That there was always a resident doctor, there were nurses, anyone who had a talent. If there were hair cutters, they had access to the hotel hair cutting salon.
Because we ran the hotel.
We ran the whole hotel. We did the whole thing
everything
ourselves. And all these services were available. And in fact, all those early years also, you have to understand, the entire administration were first-time participants. After 78, 79 was the first time that they started having
professional
the people who had more experience trying to do the jobs, but there were still always a few who were first-time participants doing it. Okay, so
79, where is 79?
79, we went up to Lake Louise, which there's
Canada.
Some incredible stories about this, and these are important in terms of what happened at these seminaries. This is Lake Louise, Canada, which is in the mountains high above Banff. This is the big, big Canadian Rockies, permanently snow-covered mountains. Lake Louise is, you know, from the photographs, one of the most drop-dead gorgeous spots on the planet. There's a glacial lake with two mountains on either side and the glacier tongue coming down into the lake in the center. Rinpoche was so, this is a story. He was so excited to be going up there. He looked at the pictures, and he was so excited, and he kept saying he couldn't wait to meet the Dralas. You understand? We just got our Drala teachings in 78. We'd never heard of Dralas before. But he said, these are real mountains. It's going to feel like home to him. It's going to be like Tibet. He could not wait to get up there. We flew into Calgary and had to drive up from Calgary, met with a little group in Calgary, and he's practically pissing in his pants to get out of there. These poor people who did all this work setting up to have a reception room. All he wants to do is get up in the mountains. We finally get out of the reception, put him in the car. We're driving him up the mountains. And it was quite a drive. It's like 3.5 hours drive still from Calgary, or four. I can't remember. It's long. And we got finally up to Lake Louise to the hotel. It was after dark. And we'd been traveling all day. We got to the hotel with all this baggage. We're starting to unload. Rinpoche will not get out of the car. He refuses to get out of the car. So what happens? He wants to go meet the Dralas. So we take all the luggage, we unpack, and go to our rooms, and we're unpacking his stuff. He's gone for another hour and a half, almost 2 hours. He finally shows up.
Somebody drove him, right?
Somebody drove him. The Kasung will remember who this was. Full Kasung and Kusung service is happening by now. That's all in place. The whole machinery is in grooves, running in grooves. He shows up in his suite. It's like 10:30 at night. I don't know what time it was. It was late, 10:30, 11. He comes stomping in, and he has a face like grim death. I mean, and we looked at him and said, what's wrong? And he looked at us and he said, in this voice like death, he said, there are no Dralas. It's dead. It's dead. And he was devastated. Absolutely devastated. We couldn't understand this. This is something, when I teach Drala, I give this story. This is always very confusing for people. But I learned from this. Drala has to do with human relationship. He said, nobody has ever loved these mountains. It's only tourists. Lake Louise was discovered by the Canadian Pacific Railroad. In blasting the tracks, they found Lake Louise. It was too high and too cold. The Indians never lived there. Nobody had ever loved these mountains, and there was no passion, and there was no Drala. They had not been loved or appreciated. So this entire 79 seminary had this atmosphere. One, Rinpoche was disappointed, but he kept saying it's dead. When you read the original transcripts, you see there's poems in them where he writes about the dead toothpick trees in the postcard hillside. And so that's the background. And we all told, we kept talking to him, talking. We said, "What, you know, can we do anything about it?" He said, "Yes, if we come here for a few years, it will change. But right now, it's dead." And he was disappointed. So the emotional affect of this seminary was flat. So that's the background emotionally. The teaching style changed dramatically. He started teaching in what he called the pundit style, which was lists. He'd never taught that way before. Not since the very early years, where he was still trying to teach very traditionally. We're saying, in general, this is true, and in particular, there are seven kinds of this and eight kinds of that. He had never done that. He had only just talked emotionally and evocatively about everything. All of a sudden, 79, with this background of flat, dead, nothing happening, he starts teaching lists. If you've read any transcripts, or if you're old enough in the Sangha to have done any of the old curriculum, these are the transcripts you know. This is where he taught the obstacles and the antidotes, the nine stages of resting in shamatha, the seven, this is how to become a dharmic person. All these lists from the Jamgon Kantrol text that Judy was talking about, but it's all lists. We'd never seen teaching like this. And it was so flat, we didn't even realize what he was giving us. Today we know. We have a couple sets of Bibles in Trungpa Rinpoche's teachings. One is the 73 transcripts, which mistakes, doesn't matter how many mistakes are in there, that's a Bible. It is so full of unbelievable stuff. And the next one, 78, is rich and juicy, but 79 is a Bible of information about practice. All this practice information that has been used in every single course, every single curriculum since then, it is still being used in the so-called new curriculum, is full of material from the little bit of Buddhism, Buddha Dharma that is in there as pure Buddha Dharma is straight from the 79 transcripts. So he's giving these incredible teachings that are so useful and so practical. And at the same time, we don't realize what we're being given because the emotional affect is so flat. And this is also very typical of Trungpa Rinpoche, also in all his teachings, but very noticeable in seminaries, that what was coming out of him emotionally, he would fill the whole environment. In this seminary, it was just blank, like nothing happening, boring. And he was giving these incredible teachings. This went right through the Vajrayana teachings. His Vajrayana teachings in that seminary were also list fashion and gorgeous. Taught Mahamudra, and he taught us the four stages of Mahamudra. Incredible teachings, but still with this affect of flatness. So that at one point in the question and answers, a woman, a very sweet woman, raised her hand 2/3 of the way through Vajrayana and said to him, "Rinpoche, is it because we aren't good enough students that you're not giving us the real teachings?" we couldn't hear what he was teaching us because the flatness was so flat. And so we were at Lake Louise for 3 years, and in fact, by
three
the
months.
End...
3 months.
No, three seminaries. Years. Three I'm seminaries. Sorry. We had three seminaries in a row there. And by the end, in fact, things were juicy and normal. But that first seminary, there was this affect of flat, dead, no dralas that underlay everything, but the teachings were magnificent. And this pundit style that he started up there, he stuck with for several years. These are the most rich and enduring teachings, some of the most rich and enduring teachings he gave us in this background.
And there's still no Orioki.
No Orioki. Orioki started in 1980. The meals, he had tried different things. He hated the meal situation.
Right, because everybody got wild.
Well, we went out. I think by 79 he had us going out and getting trays, and he might have even made us come back in the shrine room and eat on trays in the shrine room. That was already true in 78, but I remember it was already chaos in the food lines.
Yeah.
He could not get us to be silent during meals. Just as soon as meditation was over, it was functional talking was a joke. Functional talking, it wasn't until years later in Datun that we realized, he told people it's a good idea not to talk so much. Some people could actually do it. We couldn't do it then. It was a non-thing. Never happened. So that's 79 seminary. Okay.
You are listening to Mosaics on Chronicles Radio, a production of the Chronicles of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Support for this programming comes from our listening audience. To contribute, visit chroniclesradio.com and click on Support This Work. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening to Chronicles Radio. Thank you.